Time now for the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show. 30 minutes of nothing but hardcore hockey. The Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show is presented by Dave's Sports Shop, Pheasant Hills Golf Course, the Minnesota Wild, and MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com. And now, with the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show, here's your host, Pete Wagner.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show. This week, it'll be Tim Pullamainen as we're going to talk top 10 hockey in the Class 2A and Single A. Coming up in the second segment, it'll be Carol Evans' Dave Schwartz, and we'll follow that up with a look at the North Star College Classic that played out at the XL Energy Center with our very own Brian Helverson. All that and more coming up on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show.
Carol from MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com. For all your hockey equipment needs, come here to Dave's Sports Shop in Stillwater. This is Scott with Dave's, and Scott, this place is really all you need to know when it comes to getting outfitted for the hockey season.
Yes, it is, and we start from the might hockey player all the way to the girls hockey players, all the way up to the pros.
Wow.
They even bring their skates here for skate sharpening.
So for shin guards to sticks, make sure you stop by Dave's Sports Shop here in Stillwater.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm John.
We're the founders of Aspire Beverage Company, based right here in Minnesota. The Aspire story is simple. We just couldn't find a truly healthy sports drink for our active families, so we created one.
The Aspire all-natural fire, ice, and storm sports drinks contain real fruit extracts, electrolytes, antioxidants, B vitamins, and minerals for improved health and performance.
Yeah. And they taste freaking awesome at only 35 calories per bottle.
The Aspire fire, ice, and storm sports drinks are now available at all Lunds, Fire League, Kowalski's, Fresh Seasons, and Lakewind stores.
Check out all of our awesome upcoming events on our website, aspirebeverages.com.
So if you're tired of being the mean mom or dad that won't buy Gatorade or Powerade for your kids, now you can be the cool parent that brings a team pack of Aspire home.
It's freaking awesome.
Aspire to greatness.
Warning, Aspire sports drinks contain pure performance. No junk, only good stuff. They may cause victory, achievement beyond your wildest dreams, and epic greatness. They're freaking awesome. Awesome.
Hi, I'm Neil Broughton. For all your Minnesota hockey needs, go to MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com, the best one-stop online source for all your Minnesota hockey coverage and information.
It is the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show. That was Social Distortion, a tune called Angel's Wings. Tim, are you familiar with Social D?
I don't know, my ears are bleeding right now, so, you know.
Well, let's make
that's
him,
what I know.
Hang on, we'll make him bleed a little bit more. Oh, that's a good stop. Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll is the name of your album. Came out in the early 90s. It was a terrific bit, but they are one of the Pete Wagner favorites, so I thought I'd stick that into the mix of the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show today. And, Tim, the top tens come out. Should we start first with the all-important, how about Class 2A? Only I say that because we started with a single A last week, and, of course, we have a number one team. If you were to pick the number one team, I want to see if you'd agree with what I did.
You know, looking at it right now, I don't know how you'd go anywhere but Lakeville North. It's just the run that they're on, and everybody else has been losing in that top five, so... Am I right? Is that where you went?
Went with Lakeville North. They're 16-3-1 in their season, 12-1 in the conference. They defeated Eastview 4-1 and Apple Valley 3-0. They've got games against Bloomington Jefferson and Lakeville South coming up this week. But the thing that's most impressive, in their last 15 games, Tim, they're 14-0-1. They haven't lost since early December. They have 6 shutouts on the season, of which 3 have come against formerly ranked or ranked top 10 opponents, Eden Prairie 7-0, Hill Murray 3-0, and then Eastview this week by a score of 3-0. So you have to tip the cap to the structured defensive style and the creative offensive flow that they are definitely bringing. Coach Eigner getting the job done.
Yeah, I really like that team a lot. It's a strange team in that I don't think, I mean, everybody knew coming into the year that they had some talent and that they were going to be a top contender in 1A, in Section 1AA. What I didn't think people expected was they were going to be a top contender in the entire state, not only the section. He's done a really great job with that program, building them to where they are this year.
Well, it's a classic example of the talent that they had around them was there, and it's, you know, kids get better, kids evolve. I mean, a lot of people are well aware of who the Palings were coming in and that they could play the game, but to play it to the level that they are with the type of depth that team has speaks volume. I've really wanted to put Lakeville North at number one for a couple of weeks, just couldn't do it because of the volume of the top 10 teams that either are in or are not in their schedule. They've got enough, but now that Hill Murray lost to St. Thomas Academy, that was easy fix. Edina, for me, at 14-4-1, they find their way in. Tim, they're 9-3-1 against top 10 teams. One of those nine wins against the Breck Mustangs, but I have a hard time not putting them any lower than two. I think the way they play, that they are one of the toughest teams in high school hockey to play against.
Yeah, exactly. And they undoubtedly, no doubt about it, have the toughest schedule in the state. When you have that many top 10 teams that you're playing week in, you know, night in and night out. I mean, they don't, you know, schedule a tough team and then go 3 days, you know, three games against weak teams. Everybody on their schedule is tough. And to put up the record that they have, yeah, they're deserving of that number two spot.
Well, Hill Murray then comes in at three based on that notion. They're 6-3 against top 10 teams. Three less losses and quite a few, you know, three, four games fewer than the Hornets in that juncture, and plus those two teams split. The Wayzata Trojans are 0-1-1 against Edina and have lost to Hill Murray, so they become the easy number four pick there. The Elks of Elk River are 13-3 on the season. They've only lost three games, Tim, that at the Edina Holiday Classic, all three of them. However, their schedule is not that grisly, as they've only played six games against top 10 opponents, and they're 3-3 in those. All three of those opponents ranked at the time at the Edina Holiday Classic. It definitely has some weight.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that, the Edina Holiday Classic, as being one of the best fields they've ever had in that thing. And here's your prime example. Elk River finishes last place in it and hasn't lost another game. So there you go. That's an example of how tough that field was.
No doubt about it. You move along to the Burnsville Blaze, and at number six, they eke their way past Eastview but still get the win, maintain the pace in the South Suburban Conference. They tie the surging Eden Prairie Eagles, but they'll hold on to the sixth spot. Blaine hasn't done much more to come out of the seventh slot. They are 1-3-1 against top 10 teams. I can't get them any higher than three at this point. Duluth East at 13-4-1, to me, are a little bit of an enigmatic squad. I'm not sure where I want to put them. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with it, but the fact is they're number eight for me right now, as they seem to be getting better and better. How about that 39% power play and a penalty kill that's just under 90%? They're very impressive. They beat Forest Lake by a score of 6-1, and they will be a factor in the 7AA.
And that's the coaching of Mike Granoff, I think, there too. You see the systems that he puts in place for those guys. And, you know, people talk about East as not having necessarily a huge amount of offensive talent this year, but when you can get, you know, what you have with almost a 40% power play, I mean, that is strictly systems right there, and those kids know what they're doing.
No question. Eden Prairie finds their way back into the top 10. They're 12-5-2, 2-1 in the Lake Conference. They beat Burnsville 6-5. They beat Benilde St. Margaret 6-5, tied Burnsville 3-3, and then beat Hopkins 6-2 for a productive week. And they are back in the mix. They're 4-5-1 against top 10 teams. And then, Tim, who would you put in at the number 10? I want to see if you agree with what I did.
Well, you know, I think you've had Eastview in that spot before, and that's a worthy team, too. But I know they've had a little bit of a rough patch over the last week or so. I don't know. This is the thing where it's such a toss-up at this point. You could put a White Bear Lake in there. I mean, they just knocked out Hermantown, and Jake Wallen is so impressive for them. You know, you could go to the Grand Rapids with an Avery Peterson kind of leading the way, but they've stumbled a bit, too. I don't know. What you got there, Pete? Surprise me.
I went the White Bear Lake Bears. I had to give them on the strength of their weekend. Tough one. Roadie up to Hermantown. They win 4-1 there. Then they go ahead and win 4-1 at Grand Rapids against a very good Thunderhawk team. And I'm sure our very own Brian Halverson, the executive editor of the Minnesota Hockey Mag, is going to be thrilled doing cartwheels down Highway 61 in White Bear Lake, of course. He's a big fan there and a big part of the program in White Bear Lake. But, you know, the thing about the White Bear Lake Bears is, they haven't been lightning on fire lately. I mean, they've got some losses in there that make you kind of scratch your head. They've got the Moundsview loss and the Hopkins loss to go along with an Edina loss, which obviously is nothing to be ashamed of. But I think they can be ordinary on a given night and very good on a given night. But I gave them the nod because they're right there in second place in the Suburban East behind Creighton-Durham Hall, and they also had the very productive weekend.
And they did, and in section play, too, they played Hill Murray very tough in a loss earlier this year, too. So you know, they're not that far off the Pioneers as, you know, they are every year. They play them tough. So I like it. I like putting a new team in that number 10 spot.
Why don't we now turn our attentions to the class single A, as you had a couple of moves to make. The Breck Mustangs, with a tough loss to Tino Grace, didn't help their cause any.
Yeah, you know, I used to talk the previous couple of weeks about our top four, with Eastern Forest, Warro, and Hermans Mountain and Breck. Breck's got tumbled out of that a little bit lately. They're enigmatic. Along with the team that beat them first in class today, with Duluth Marshall, both Marshall and Breck are really, you know, wreaking havoc on my rankings by losing to teams they shouldn't and beating teams you wouldn't expect them to. So it's a little bit confusing, although I will say, maybe my Northwestern colors are showing a little bit here right now in my rankings, because I've got East Grand Forks taking over that number one slot this week. They went undefeated last week. They continue to not only not give up goals, but they rarely give shots on goal. I mean, I did a little computing over the weekend. They're allowing only 14, just over 14 shots a game on goal total against everybody. There's only three teams all year that have had as many as 20 shots on goal against them. So they are very, very tough defensively. And so they get that number one spot just ahead of their close rival, Warroad. I put Warroad in that number two spot. It's kind of a study in contrast. You've got defense at East Grand Forks, and you've got that high-scoring top line at Warroad. And they actually go head-to-head this Saturday up in Warroad. We'll get a real determination on who that true number one team is at that point.
That could be a great preview of this Class 1A Section 8 final between those two teams. And, you know, it will be a clash of styles. Who did you put in at number three?
Yeah, this is where I put Hermantown. I couldn't knock them too much for losing to a good and now top 10 ranked Class 2A team.
I bailed you out.
LA Class 3. Yeah, they bailed. You bailed me out with that one. Hermantown is 11-0 against Class A teams, outscoring them by an average of, I think I did, it was about 7 goals, 4 to 1.5 against. And so I can't knock Hermantown much for losing that game.
Tim, we're running low on time here. We're running low on time here for this segment. Can you please give me a couple of surprises that eked their way into your top 10, if there are any of those creatures, and then we can send everybody to the article coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, no real surprises, although I did put St. Cloud Cathedral back in that 10th spot. Had a four-game losing streak, but it was on the road against East Grand Forks, Warroad, Hermantown, and Breck, so it's tough to knock them too much for that. They're 13-6, but I slipped them back into that number 10 spot. They're the only new team, although there's a little bit of jumbling in the middle of the pack. You'll see that in the article.
Great, Tim. You and I will have more to talk about with the Overtime Radio Show every Wednesday and Friday. Be sure to check it out right here on the Minnesota Hockey Mag. Once again, you're the man. Thanks for joining us, and great work on your top 10.
I love it, Pete. I look forward to this every week.
Tim Kolomainen will be back with Dave Schwartz from Care 11 right after this on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Radio Show.
Zach, Sammy, and Cole all have a very special wish. We're making those wishes come true. Hi, I'm Brian Dennehy. I want to be sure that you know about a very special wish-granting organization, Wishes and More. We enhance the life of a child fighting a terminal or life-threatening condition by providing extraordinary experiences and more. If you know of a child that we can help, or if you'd like to help us make wishes come true, please contact us. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Neil Broden here in Hammond, Wisconsin at the Pheasant Hills Golf Club, a favorite local course of mine in western Wisconsin. Located just a short drive from the Twin Cities, for its value and course layout, Pheasant Hills Golf Club is a great place to live. For 2013, enjoy country living on the golf course with large course lots available starting at just $25,000 per lot. For all details on golf course lots, call Ron Bonte at 715-796-2500.
And welcome back to the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Radio Show. Joining us from his Care 11 suite, or maybe home, I'll have to find this out here, is our very own Dave Schwartz. Are you working or home today?
I'm home today. I'm off today and tomorrow from Care, and then I am working after that for the next 5 weeks, I think, straight.
Hopefully it's good work, right? I mean, when do you get on the plane and head over to Sochi?
I leave Saturday night, and by Sunday evening, Sochi time Sunday afternoon, our time here, I will be in Russia.
Let's go there and pick that scab for a minute. Obviously, the talk has been about the terror threats and whatnot that are coming out of the North Caucasus region over in Russia. And there have been, the most recent report is, you know, the Brits are now suggesting that they expect some sort of attack. The thing that's intriguing me is, I've been doing a lot of research on this. It looks like the Olympic Village itself, where the games are going to happen, isn't where anything could reportedly occur, but that it may be more in the transit systems and those kinds of things. With that said, obviously you're going over there. How much is that on your mind right now?
I'd be lying if I said it wasn't on my mind, if I didn't think about it. I've thought a lot about it. I've weighed my options. There have been times where we as a station group, and there's about 20 of us going across the Gannett station group, we've been told that if we didn't want to go, we didn't have to. They laid everything out for us. We've spoken with the folks from NBC. I can tell you, what I can tell you is that what we hear from NBC and what they're intel people here over in Sochi and what the reporters who are already over there are saying is a vastly different picture than what is painted on our television in the United States. I know people will find this hard to believe, and I fully understand that this statement is hypocritical because I am part of the media, but we do like to spin things a bit in this country in order to keep eyes on the television set, because no one likes to watch the news and hear stories that everything's okay. It's boring.
Yeah.
And so, listen, is there a threat? Yes, there's always a threat. There's always a threat when you go overseas. There's always a threat when you walk out the door every day. Are they the same? No, certainly not. But from everything that we're hearing is that, yes, the Olympic Village is as safe as you can be in this situation. That is where my hotel is. That's where all the venues are. That's where the main press center will be. And that's where I'll be most of the time, other than having to go up into the mountains for some of the skiing events, which is also very safe. So I've thought about it a lot, and I've gone through a wide range of emotions on it. In the end, the opportunity to be at the top of my profession, covering arguably the greatest sporting event in my profession, was too great to pass up because of fear of the unknown and fear of what might happen.
Well,
and that's what it came down to for me.
I don't think there's a person out here that wouldn't disagree at all with what you're suggested there. I mean, how could you not? And I think at the end of the day, terror is designed to create terror and fear and not, you know, allow people to move on with their everyday life. You just need to be vigilant and have things in place. But, you know, when you have 30,000 to 40,000 police within that area you're going to be, it's even admitted by the British report today that it's going to be very difficult to be able to penetrate that, and it's probably more, if anything occurs, if, that's the key word, would be in the outlying transit type things of what we've experienced with the three attacks earlier. So from a wild player perspective, NHL player perspective, you know, we've heard, you know, Zach Parise suggest that, you know, at what point do we have to go, or should we be thinking about this? Do you think that's been tempered a little bit then from those guys?
And I talked to Zach actually about a day before some of those comments, and he and I talked off camera, and we both talked about being a little fearful. And, you know, for any of us who have kids, you have to understand where Zach Parise is in his life right now.
So mm-hmm.
He just had twins, and less than a month ago, and now he's got to leave and go to a place that's scary. And I think that when you have children, and I have a 3-year-old and 2-year-old, especially when you first have them, you first become a father or a mother for that matter. It's a very vulnerable state because this is a part of your life that you have more than likely been waiting for such a long time. And there's so much investment there, and you all of a sudden are more than just yourself. And there's a great burden that comes with that. And I remember feeling that, and I still feel that way, and that's on my mind a lot when I think about this. And I think more than anything, and I don't blame him for this at all, I think that's what guides Zach Parise's mind at this point.
Yeah.
I think he thinks about the fact that he just became a father, and he is the breadwinner very much over that family level. I'm sure they'll be fine no matter what. But, you know, it's being a new parent is exciting, it's wonderful, and it's a very vulnerable position at the same time because everything rides on you. And so it's a scary time. And I don't blame him for feeling the way he feels because, frankly, I've felt that way too. I will tell you that I'm not sure the information that he's getting is from the right sources. They are protecting the athletes greatly. The security that you hear about on the ground at this point, from what I know, is just the Russian forces and I think some Americans that are coming in as well. But a lot of these athletes, I don't know if USA Hockey is one of them, will have their own security in addition to that. Every hotel has their own security. All of these athlete villages have their own security in addition to everything else. So there's sometimes 3 and 4 levels of security for all of us at this point there. Again, nothing is 100% at all, because you never know.
Absolutely.
But there are a lot. If you ask 10 experts, 5 of them will tell you one thing, 5 of them will tell you another. But a lot of people at this point are saying one of the safest places on Earth to be at this point is inside the walls of Olympic Park, which is where we'll all be.
Well, I think that's what we're all hearing. So let's talk about a safe place not to be, which was on the ice in Vancouver a week ago this past Saturday, where the line brawl played out, and your article came through about the coaches and John Tortorella absolutely snapping and losing it. I have to tell you, when I saw the video, I was watching it on the center ice package because I have that. When I saw them come back from the commercial and I saw him trying to get into the room, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like a bad version of Let's Play Hockey, Slapshot.
Yeah, I just that's Tort's way. I mean, we all know that he's a fiery guy. I'm a Rangers fan. You know, it's one of the teams I root for, obviously. But that's just kind of the way he is. He's fiery, and I get that. But you can't do that kind of stuff. You know, you can't be that loose cannon and maintain the respect from your players, because as a coach, especially in the National Hockey League, a lot of times you have to be the voice of reason. Can you be fiery? Yes. But can you go crazy? No. And now, you know, when Patrick Waugh got hired in Colorado, that was the knock, is that he was going to have to temper it down a little bit. Yes, he can be fiery, and yes, you can try to inspire your players, but you can't go completely nuts, because they're going to look to you to be the calm in the storm. And they have to know that you're that you're that person when it comes to being a coach. My biggest issue with this whole thing, I'm sure if you read the article, they'll gather this from it. I was fired up, because it's just irresponsible, I think, as a coach to do what he did. And both teams are at fault. Don't get me wrong. For Buffalo and Calgary to put out their fourth line out there, clearly making a statement that they are going to try to drop the glove. And for Tortorella to do the same thing to try to counter. The strategic part of it is one thing, but you're basically forcing players to go out there and harm themselves. And that's what bothered me about this, is you're taking young men, a lot of guys, especially when you come to the fourth line, it's guys who are bouncing back and forth, who are just trying to make a name for themselves to play hockey, and you're sending them out there to go out and get into a brawl, which, as we know at this point, we've talked about this before, Pete, it's dangerous when it comes to doing that. You get concussions. Guys can die. I mean, it's happened in junior hockey where a kid, you know, gets into a fight, falls backwards, and cracks his skull open and dies. I mean, you can't make people do that. And that's what they did. And that's why it really made me angry. And I know people say, well, they're grown men, you know, they can do what they want. And I said this in the article. Sure, they can, but you'll get sent back to the minors so fast, and then you'll get branded as a guy who's not a team player. You'll never see the light of the NHL again.
Well,
of course they're going to do what their coach asks.
What was the backfill on that? There had to be a reason. Here's the devil's advocate question to Bob Hartley's fourth line question, and it's all a question. What was the backfill? What is the history between these teams? And did something occur in their last game? Because, honestly, I was looking up and down for something where I could see where, someone's going to get it here. And that wasn't necessarily the case from what I could see, unless you can help me out with that. But the biggest thing that I have is, what if a guy does want to start his fourth line to send a message to his first, second, or third? Is it a perception issue by the other team? Ooh, they want to do this, and I'm not saying that's what Torts did, but I think he kind of overreacted in the situation. Maybe I'm totally off base, but that's kind of how it felt. But the thing is, the whole thing just spiraled out of control.
Yeah, I agree, and I couldn't find anything either. Other than Calgary and Vancouver are rivals. You know, those Canadian teams and the cities, they really don't like each other, and that's obvious. And those teams go way back, but. Yeah, I kind of wanted the same thing. I mean, but at the same time, are you going to put out you know, the Sedin brothers.
Well, you can't.
When they're going to put their goons out there to try to beat it. So instead, you put out a guy who's a little more expendable. I don't like any of that, to be honest with you. And did Tortorella go a little too far? Yeah. He went completely bonkers. I mean,
it was entertaining.
There has to be something else there that they made it very clear. Hey, our fourth line's going to start, and we're going to beat your brains in, so just be ready for that.
Let's shift gears now. The Minnesota Wild pick up a point in San Jose. When we went into the third period with that tilt, I'm thinking, Dave, oh my goodness, they've got a pretty decent opportunity to pick up 2 points they don't ordinarily pick up in the tank. And once again, somehow the Sharks found a way to go with three unanswered. But still, that's a pretty big point as things are really tightening up with Dallas and Phoenix, you know, with those games in hand, kind of working their way, inching closer to Minnesota in that seventh or eighth playoff spot.
Yeah, and San Jose's so good. We all know, you look at their roster top to bottom, they have that perfect, perfect mix of talented young guys and great veterans. I mean, from, you know, you got Marlowe, you got Thornton, you got guys who can lead, and I mean, Thornton is the game winner on what looked to be a routine slap shot for the most part. He just beat Kemper. I don't know if Kemper got screened and couldn't see it or what, but yeah, I mean, it's good to get 1 point. And when you look at this stretch, I mean, I think of their next, this road swing here, this four-game road swing, including San Jose, I think three of the teams were ahead of them in the standings. So you knew it was going to be tough, and you knew this road swing was really going to test the Wild. So it's good that they got out of there with 1 point. But San Jose's hard. San Jose's a good team. And this is a road test to try to finish off the first half of the year before the break.
So this little sprint to the finish before the Olympics leaves the Wild. We'll have 58 games played with 24 to go. Do you know from an inside perspective, how important is it for this team to hold a playoff spot once that break occurs? Has that been discussed toward you at all?
Not with me, directly, but I will tell you that I think from what happened last year that it's immensely important that they not only clinch a playoff spot but go past the first round. I really, truly believe that Craig Leopold is running out of patience. This is a guess. This is just my gut feeling. But when you look at the moves, how could he not? When you look at the moves he's made in the past year and a half with Suter and Parisi and what he gave up to get Pominville, these are moves of an owner who wants to win now. He wants to get the Winter Classic here. He wants to put Minnesota on the map in the NHL. And I don't think that a first-round playoff exit is good enough to save anyone's job. And I'm dead serious about that. If they don't make it, even if they make it in the first round and don't make it pass, I still would not be comfortable if I was Mike Gill or Chuck Fletcher. I really wouldn't.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to jump in, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut that off, but I also think it really comes down to the bottom line dollar. I mean, I think this club, in order to be successful, needs to get past the first round and into the second, more from a financial success than anything.
Yeah, you're right. They have to. And for Craig Leopold, it's everything is about winning in the Winter Classic at this point. I do believe that. Yes, he's realistic. He wants a Stanley Cup, but from what I've heard from talking to him, I remember talking the day that they signed Parisi and Suter, and all he could talk about was how much he lobbied with Gary Bettman to get the Winter Classic. It's what he wants. It's everything to him at this point, from what I've understood. He also wants to win. He also wants to win a Stanley Cup first and foremost. But it'll be interesting to see what they do here. There's lots of rumors about some trades and some possible movement. If they make a significant move and they don't make it past the first round of the playoffs, I would expect that some people are going to be looking for jobs next year. Players and coaches and GMs.
We'll keep our eyes open to that. So are we going to be able to do the Skype thing from Sochi, or are we kind of in trouble with that?
I'm hopeful that we can. It's going to be a lot of things at this point I don't know until I get there. It's kind of a wait and see.
Okay, so what we'll do... We'll put all of our listeners on hold, and we'll see if we can. No, but what we're getting at is if we can pull it off, we're going to try to, correct?
Yes.
Excellent.
Absolutely. I would guarantee at least a couple of times I can check in. I just don't know how many and how difficult it will be. But I'm certainly going to try like I can. I am still going to be writing over there, and it's going to really just be four columns about what I'm doing. the field, what it's like to be over there, what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing and what I'm doing. And I'm really going to aim to give the list, to give the viewers, I'm really going to aim to give the readers, viewers as well from Carolina, but to give the readers an idea of what it's like to be a journalist covering Olympic hockey for the first time. And hopefully people will find that interesting. I hope so, as much as I will.
Well, that's great, sir. You're embedded. You'll be with everything. We'll be thinking about you. I'll be praying for you, and hopefully we can talk soon.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, be safe. Dave Schwartz from Care 11 heading over to Sochi. Hopefully we'll hear from him soon. We'll be back with Brian Halverson on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show.
Sharpening or a free roll of tape? Come into any of the Dave Sports Shop stores and just mention MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com and get either a free skate sharpening or a free roll of tape on us. Hurry in, as this offer is good for the first 200 customers.
Visit Dave Sports Shop's three locations in Blaine, Fridley, and Stillwater. Dave Sports Shop.
And welcome back to the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show. We bring in our very own executive editor, Brian Halverson, as he is at the North Star College Cup that played out at the Xcel Energy Center this past weekend. The University of Minnesota, UMD, St. Cloud State, and of course, Minnesota State Mankato. The first thing that really stood out to me, Mr. Halverson, was the sweaters of Minnesota State Mankato. A little bit of a different look.
Yeah, you're talking about those gray ones on the first night?
Yeah. I was like, where did these things come from?
You know, I myself didn't remember seeing them before, so it kind of caught me a little bit off guard. But, it's just definitely a unique look, for sure.
How about the way that the play played out, though, in day one? I mean, first you had the overtime win for the University of Minnesota Duluth, and this looks like a much improved Minnesota State Mankato edition under the second year of Coach Hastings. Is that kind of what your assessment is thus far?
Yeah. I mean, they've kind of been up and down this year, but they certainly played Minnesota Duluth very tough the first night, and forced that team to overtime. Jean-Paul Lafontaine, of course, he led the tournament in scoring with 5 points. He had 3 goals and 2 assists, and was impressive. A little bit of struggle for their goaltending this weekend, though, and I think Coach Mike Hastings did a good job of protecting his boys, but I think there's some reasons for some concern in that area for them. But overall, like I said, they played well in their loss to UMD, and then got off to a decent start against St. Cloud State in the consolation game, but things kind of fell apart quickly for them in the second period.
And then the rest was history, obviously, for them. And, St. Cloud State is a top-notch hockey club, obviously, and we know a lot about their exploits. But the University of Minnesota continues their role a little bit. Obviously, they had to work hard to get past UMD, Brian. But the fact of the matter is, right now, as of today, the Gophers are playing quite well. And it's interesting because it's usually this time of the year after they get their World Junior players back and they kind of get back into the winter semesters here where maybe they hit a little bit of a lull between now and somewhere in February. But for the Gophers, this looks like this is legitimately a team that can go wire to wire with their number one ranking the way they've been playing here.
Yeah, they were helped a lot this weekend by their power play. They were 5 for 9 on the power play in 2 games, and they're tough. You can't afford to take any penalties against this team the way they're going. I was impressed by the way Minnesota Duluth came out and gave them everything they could handle through that game. It was a really fun game. It had its scoring moments. You saw 3 goals in 39 seconds there.
Yep.
First period, and that really after was a scoreless for the first half of the period, and boy, things just exploded there. And the physicality picked up as the game went on, and then you have Drew Glass-Rava coming in and fired that puck to tie the game with just a couple minutes to go to send that thing to overtime and set up, of course, the dramatic shootout with Kyle Rowe and Seth Ambrose getting it done and giving the Gophers the cup, first ever cup.
The first ever North Star College Cup, that's correct. And, you know, Scott Sandlin, after the game, obviously picked up the tie in regulation. We have the shootout to award the cup. What was his general feel from the weekend, and where was he at from what you could tell?
I think he was pretty satisfied with the way his team played, obviously. They were certainly in both games, played a couple of real close games, and went to overtime, and Saturday night especially, they really pushed the number one team in the country to the brink, and it was kind of fun that game. Like, you got the feeling it kind of took on a tone of an old school WCHA kind of hate filled contest there. So that rivalry really started to. Come out in that game, and it made the game for a lot of fun.
Let me ask you about that old school rivalry. Do you think we're missing those a little bit now, Brian, in lieu of the Big Ten?
Yeah. I mean, it's not there yet. I mean, you still got Wisconsin, but you're right between Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State. It's really not there. I mean, the Gophers have had some really good battles with Michigan and Michigan State over the years, but the rivalry isn't as developed, certainly as what they had with Minnesota Duluth and North Dakota and such. So this is going to have to play itself out. I mean, we're in the first year of it all. You can't really expect there to be a lot of hatred build up between any of the teams at this point. But I think a couple of years of playing each other and as hopefully some of the other teams do improve to a point where there's a battle for the top spot at the end of the season. The Gophers are kind of running away with it right now. But as the battles for the top spot in the league get more frequent.
Where are we at in terms? Sorry about that. Where are we at in terms of the rest of the NCHC, the North Dakota UMD rivalry, UNO, and let's say St. Cloud State? Is that still healthy for those fans throughout Minnesota? So there's a big chunk of people that sit in the Twin Cities and have no choice but to watch Golden Gopher hockey unless they can find it online somewhere with the rest of the NCHC. It feels like there's been a little bit of a disconnect from my perspective as far as being able to view all of those other teams. Are they still getting it on, or what's the tempo of that? Is it the same thing, a wait-and-see thing?
Well, it's a little bit difficult with the NCHC because there is some more familiarity there. And I think recently UMD and Western Michigan had a pretty rough series, had a tough series against each other. And I can see that becoming a burgeoning rivalry.
Wonderful.
UMD in North Dakota is always a good series to catch too. And I think because they've met in the postseason lately, I think if you look at St. Augustine and Nebraska Omaha, they're pretty proximate and that can develop into something. And even North Dakota and Denver is starting to become a pretty good rivalry too. So I think that the NCHC is definitely more developed in that area than the Big Ten. Minnesota State swept then number two at Lee Ferris State at their place in Mankato, and things got pretty testy down there as well. So that's something that could be developing, because I see those two teams as being upper echelon teams in the WCHA for a long time.
Excellent. We'll keep our eyes off that. How about Johnny Brodzinski?
He's something else. He scored the only goal against Minnesota on Friday night, and then got a couple more in the 5th in the consolation game against Minnesota State. And, you know, you can't leave the guy alone in the scoring area, that's for sure. I mean, for instance, Minnesota State coach Matt Casey said, you know, he, after the game, he said, you know, you give Johnny Radzinski the opportunity in the middle of the slot like that without getting the block, getting the stick on it, he's got a tendency to find twine. And he's got more than a tendency to find twine. I mean, you can't leave the kid alone. The guy knows how to score goals. I mean, we all saw him. You and I both, you know, got to see a lot of him back when he was playing for Blaine, and lit it up in the high school state tournament and such. And he's just continued that in his college career. And good for him. He was named NCHC Player of the Week for his effort over the weekend.
Where do you see the St. Cloud State team stacking up as far as the depth of how deep they went last year in the postseason? Are they poised to do the same thing this year?
You know, I think they can still make that kind of a run. It's really going to depend on, you know, how well Ryan Farragher plays. You know, he looked a little rough this weekend. He got pulled against Minnesota on Friday and came back on Saturday and, you know, played pretty well in a 6-4 game, but he gave up some that, you know, a couple that probably he shouldn't have. And so, you know, if he can find the consistency that he had, you know, especially late last season, I think they'll be fine. I think they've got the firepower up front, you know, and defensively, you know, between Procno and Kevin Gravel and such, they'll be okay there too. So, yeah, it's really going to come down to goaltending and you know, whether they can stay healthy, as far as I'm concerned.
Have a big congratulations for you, sir. You went viral with your article that you wrote about the White Bear Lake Bantam goaltender. That thing has gotten a ton of views. It's known around the every time I bring it up, everybody will say to me, yeah, we've seen that. So that means it's been pretty well saturated out there. So I want to thank you for telling that story. It was heartwarming, and it was a wonderful thing, and I think great for the MinnesotaHockeyMag.com.
Well, thanks, Pete. It was a fun story to write. You know, you don't often get a chance to write stories like that, and you know, when the opportunity comes up, you really got to take that opportunity. And I was lucky to have been there to do it. So I appreciate that.
Well done, indeed, sir. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow night, this will be Tuesday night, it's going to be Creighton Durham Hall playing host to St. Thomas Academy. That'll be live and online on the MinnesotaHockeyMag.com under media. Hit the stream side of things, live stream, and you'll be able to get that game. We'll have that all set up for you. St. Thomas Academy on the road at Highland Park Arena, taking on the Creighton-Durham Hall Raiders. We'll have our show coming up, the Overtime Radio Show, on Wednesday and Friday as well. Thank you, Brian, for joining us here today, and we're going to call it quits. We'll be back with another big show next week.
Thanks a lot, Pete. I had a great time.
Brian Halverson, Tim Kolomainen, and Dave Schwartz on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show. That's going to do it for today's edition. I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.
Hockey Magazine Show. The Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show has been presented by Dave's Sports Shop, the Pheasant Hills Golf Course, the Minnesota Wild, and MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com. This has been the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show.